Chapter 2. A Person of Influence Nurtures Other People. Several years ago, Nancy and I decided that we wanted to help our son Eric become a little more independent. In general, he does really well. In fact, he participates in many activities that someone who's not bound by a wheelchair never gets to. But we thought he'd enjoy taking another step in his personal development, so we looked into something we'd heard about called Canine Companions for Independence, an organization that matches specially trained dogs to people with disabilities. Eric loved the idea of getting a dog, and we applied to receive one that would match his needs. For the next several weeks, we waited, and not a day went by that Eric didn't talk about it. Finally, one afternoon, we received a call from CCI telling us that they had a dog for Eric, and the next morning, we took off for their center in Oceanside, California. Eric fell in love with Sable immediately. She was an energetic golden retriever who was a little over a year and a half old. The two of them went through boot camp and learned how to work together. Sable could turn lights off and on for Eric, accompany him to the store with money, and carry his purchases back for him, and a bunch of other things. As boot camp was coming to a close, one of the trainers sat down with Eric and talked with him. He said, "Eric, no matter what else you do or don't do with Sable, be sure of one thing. You have to be the one who feeds her. That's very important. It's the only way to be sure that she will bond with you and look to you as her master." For Eric, giving the dog love and affection was easy. He enjoyed petting and grooming her, but it was harder for him to learn how to take charge. He has a pretty docile personality, but in time, he learned to feed her, and it eventually became his favorite part of their routine.
Feeding a dog is the best way to create a relationship with her. It not only provides what the dog needs, giving her life and strength, but it teaches her to trust and follow you. And in most cases, when you do the feeding, the care you give is returned with loyalty, obedience, and affection. In some ways, people respond very similarly to the way some animals do. And like animals, people need to be cared for, not just physically, but emotionally. If you look around, you'll discover that there are people in your life who want to be fed with encouragement, recognition, security, and hope. That process is called nurturing, and it's a need that every human being has. If you desire to become an influencer in another person's life, the way to start is by nurturing him or her. Many people mistakenly believe that the way to become an influencer in the life of another person is to become an authority figure, correct their errors, reveal their weak areas they can't easily see in themselves, and give so-called constructive criticism. But what clergyman John Knox said over 400 years ago is still true. You cannot antagonize and influence at the same time. At the heart of the nurturing process is genuine concern for others. When you hear the word nurture, what do you first think of? If you're like most people, you probably envision a mother cradling a baby. She takes care of her child, protecting it, feeding it, encouraging it, making sure that its needs are met. She doesn't give it attention only when she's got spare time or when it's convenient. She loves it and wants it to thrive. Similarly, as we try to help and influence the people around us, we must also have positive feelings and concerns for them. If you want to help people and make a positive impact on them, you cannot dislike, despise, or disparage them. You must give love to them and give them respect. Or, as human relations expert Les Giblin says, you can't make the other fellow feel important in your presence if you secretly feel that he is a nobody. You may be wondering why you should take on a nurturing role with the people you want to influence, especially if they are employees, colleagues, or friends, not family members. You may be saying to yourself, isn't that something they can get somewhere else, like at home? The unfortunate truth is most people are desperate for encouragement, and even if they have a few people in their lives who build them up, you still need to become a nurturer to them, because people are influenced most by those who make them feel the best about themselves. If you become a major nurturer in the life of another person, then you have an opportunity to make a major impact on them. The key to becoming a nurturer is learning to be other-minded. Instead of thinking of yourself, learn to put others first. Instead of putting others in their place, try to put yourself in their place. That's not always easy. Only when you have a sense of peace about yourself and who you are will you be able to be other-minded and give yourself away to others. But the rewards of nurturing are great. When you nurture people, they receive a great deal, including these five things. Number one, positive self-worth. Nathaniel Brandon, a psychiatrist and expert on the subject of self-esteem, has stated that no factor is more decisive in people's psychological development and motivation than the value judgments they make about themselves. He says that the nature of self-evaluation has a profound effect on a person's values, beliefs, thinking processes, feelings, needs, and goals. In his view, self-esteem is the single most significant key to a person's behavior. If you want to help a person improve his quality of life, become more productive at work, and develop more positive relationships, then build his self-worth. Make him feel good about himself, and the positive benefits will spill over in every aspect of his life. And when he begins to experience those benefits, he will be grateful to you. Number two, sense of belonging. Positive influencers understand people's needs for a sense of belonging and do things that make people feel included. Parents make sure their children feel like important members of the family. Spouses make the person to whom they are married feel like a cherished equal partner. And bosses let their employees know that they are valued members of the team. Great leaders are particularly talented at making their followers feel that they belong. Napoleon Bonaparte, for example, was a master at making people feel important and included. He was known for wandering through the camp and greeting every officer by name. As he talked to each man, he would ask about his hometown, wife, and family. And the general would talk about a battle or maneuver in which he knew the man had taken part. The interest and time he took with his followers made them feel a great sense of camaraderie and belonging. It's no wonder that his men were devoted to him. Number three, perspective. For most people, it's not what they are that holds them back. It's what they think they're not. Everyone appreciates being nurtured, even great men and women. A small exhibit at the Smithsonian Institution bears this out. It contains the personal effects found on Abraham Lincoln the night that he was shot. A small handkerchief embroidered, A. Lincoln. A country boy's penknife, a spectacle case repaired with cotton string, a Confederate $5 bill, and a worn-out newspaper clipping extolling his accomplishments as president. It begins, "Abe Lincoln is one of the greatest statesmen of all time." As we mentioned in the previous chapter, Lincoln faced fierce criticism while in office, and it would have been easy for him to become totally discouraged. That article, worn with repeated reading, undoubtedly helped him during very difficult times. It nurtured him along and helped him retain his perspective. Number four, feeling of significance. Woody Allen once said, "My only regret in life is that I'm not someone else." And while he probably said that to get a laugh, with the relationship problems he's had over the years, we can't help wondering how much truth there is in his comment. In fact, the price tag that the world puts on us is almost identical to the one we put on ourselves. People who have a great deal of self-respect and who believe that they have significance are usually respected and made to feel valued by others. When you nurture people and add value to them without expecting anything in return, they feel significant. They realize that they are valued, that they matter to others, and once they consistently feel positive about themselves, then they're free to live more positively for themselves and others. Number five, hope. Writer Mark Twain said, "Keep away from people who try to belittle your ambitions. Small people always do that, but the really great people make you feel that you, too, can become great." How do most people feel when they're around you? Do they feel small and insignificant, or do they believe in themselves and have great hope about what they can become? Hope is perhaps the greatest gift that you can give another person as a result of nurturing. Because even if a person's sense of self is weak and he fails to see his own significance, he still has a reason to keep trying and striving to reach his potential in the future.
The key to how you treat people lies in how you think about them. It's a matter of attitude. What you believe is revealed by how you act. Johann Wolfgang von Goethe said, "Treat a man as he appears to be, and you make him worse. But treat a man as if he already were what he potentially could be, and you make him what he should be." How to become a natural nurturer. Maybe you weren't born a nurturing person. Many people find it hard to be loving and positive to others, especially if the environment they grew up in wasn't particularly uplifting. But anyone can become a great nurturer and add value to others. If you cultivate a positive attitude of other-mindedness, you too can become a natural at nurturing and enjoy the added privilege of influence in the lives of others. Here's how to do it. First, commit to them. Make a commitment to becoming a nurturer. When you make a commitment to helping people, it changes your priorities and your actions. Love for others always finds a way to help. Indifference to others finds nothing but excuses. Second, believe in them. People rise or fall to meet the expectations of those closest to them. Give people your trust and hope, and they will do everything they can not to let you down. Third, be accessible to them. You can't nurture anyone from a distance. You can only do it up close. When you first start the process with people, you may need to spend a lot of time with them. But as they gain confidence in themselves and the relationship, they will require less personal contact. Until they reach that point, make sure they have good access to you. Fourth, give with no strings attached. If you need people, you cannot lead them. And nurturing is an aspect of leadership. Instead of trying to make a transaction out of it, give freely without expecting anything in return. Henry Drummond said, "You will find as you look back upon your life that the moments when you have really lived are the moments when you have done things in a spirit of love." Fifth, give them opportunities. As the people you nurture gain strength, give them additional opportunities to succeed and grow. You will continue to nurture them, but as time goes by, their own actions and accomplishments will help to keep them secure, respected, and encouraged. And finally, sixth, lift them to a higher level. Your ultimate goal should always be to help people go to a higher level, to reach their potential. Nurturing is the foundation upon which the person can begin the building process.
One of the greatest stories of encouragement and nurturing that we've ever heard is about John Wesley, one of the influencers we mention in this book's introduction. In 1791, Wesley wrote a letter to a man named William Wilberforce, a member of England's Parliament, who was in the midst of fighting for the abolition of the British slave trade. The letter, which has since become famous, said this: London, February 26, 1791. "Dear Sir, unless the divine power has raised you up, I see not how you can go through your glorious enterprise in opposing that execrable villainy, which is the scandal of religion, of England, and of human nature. Unless God has raised you up for this very thing, you will be worn out by the opposition of men and devils. But if God be for you, who can be against you? Are all of them stronger than God? Oh, be not weary in well-doing. Go on, in the name of God and in the power of His might, till even American slavery, the vilest that ever saw the sun, shall vanish away before it. That He who has guided you from your youth up may continue to strengthen you in this and all things, is the prayer of your affectionate servant, John Wesley." Four days later, Wesley was dead at the age of 88, yet his influence in Wilberforce's life continued for years. Wilberforce did not succeed in convincing Parliament to abolish slavery at that time, but he didn't give up the fight. He kept at it for decades despite slander, vilification, and threats. And when he thought he couldn't go on any farther, he looked to Wesley's letter for encouragement. Finally, in 1807, the slave trade was abolished. And in 1833, several months after Wilberforce's death, slavery was outlawed in all of the British Empire. Though condemned by many during his career, Wilberforce was buried with honor in Westminster Abbey, one of the most esteemed men of his day. Part of his epitaph reads, eminent as he was in every department of public labor, and a leader in every work of charity, whether to relieve the temporal or the spiritual wants of his fellow men, his name will be specially identified with those exertions, which by the blessing of God removed from England the guilt of the African slave trade, and prepared the way for the abolition of slavery in every colony of the empire. Maybe there is a William Wilberforce in your life, just waiting to be nurtured to greatness. The only way you'll ever know is to become a nurturer who is other-minded and adds value to the people he meets.